The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners Tyler Cook and Spencer Hager. And today's topic is going to be a fun one, I think, to approach. Lots of people out there asking questions. You ask, we respond. So financial planning for physicians from residency to retirement. How you perceive your potential lifestyle means everything, you know, as you approach your salary, let alone retirement. And I've had a lot of conversations with people about this. I'm very curious to pick your brain about this. There's a lot on deck to talk about. So let's start with student loan debt, right at the very basic bones, right out of college. You've got a client that comes in that's in residency, getting ready to jumpstart the career. You know, what's the first thing you say when you look at those kind of numbers?
I'd probably say slow down a little bit in general, like right out of college, just from the standpoint. I feel like we've said this on other podcasts, talking about just student loans in general, be it, you know, grad school or just coming out in general, until you really know exactly where you're going to land. And at least to my knowledge, residency, you're still, your income's going up. You're not necessarily that high flyer that maybe you're aspiring to be. So I would just say, you know, get through that phase, wait until the income actually jumps up before you do anything drastic, like refinance and things like that. And depending on where you land, there could be some other options as far as debt repayment versus just immediately trying to refinance, pay the most you can against it, that could, you know, cut against you depending on what your final career is.
Yeah, I think figuring out what your compensation package looks like is an important point to that, because a lot of the different healthcare organizations will provide assistance. You'll pay $50,000 back for your student loan. So it might not be the best idea for you to start taking that new high salary and paying off the debt quicker when you can use a benefit like that. So we've seen that play out. A lot of times, too. My neighbor's actually a really good friend of mine. He's a physician. He tells stories about how much he sacrificed early on, and then what he hates hearing now is people say, "Oh, must be nice. You're a doctor. Must be nice." Well,
see,
what about all?
That's
what about
I'm
all
talking
that?
About.
Yeah. Well, what about all that delayed gratification of his friends are out partying, he was inside studying. So it's to all that to say that once you do turn the corner and actually start making that higher salary, really important to reset yourself, center where you're at, figure out your long term goals, and then debt reduction is a secondary conversation to that.
Okay, so let's give you a scenario. You've got somebody already in their role as a physician. When is refinancing a better option for a high income earner, for instance, who's already been in practice maybe a couple of years?
Yeah, I feel like dentists and physicians have kind of a target on their back because the lenders know that they have the income to pay back the loan, so they get there's more options. There's doctor loans. You hear those things called, which without certain provisions that a normal provider or a normal applicant would have to go through. And so they kind of skip some of those things with physicians because they know they have the income. That can also be kind of a slippery slope where the physician takes on too much of a debt early on and doesn't realize, for example, with a home, it's not just the mortgage, it's the cost of ownership. It's the bigger pictures than that. So you got to be careful and realize, yes, your income is your income, but like we always talk about, it's about what you keep. Mm-hmm. So figuring that part out first before you overextend yourself, certainly with a first home purchase, or maybe you want to get that new vehicle you've been waiting for. All those things are well and good, but just making sure you do it at the right time.
I would think that, and I mean no, not to disparage anything, it's just human nature. I would think that the first thing you would want to do when you're looking at a salary like that is get wide-eyed about what you can spend it on, you know, especially when you're maybe keeping up with somebody else, or you maybe, because you're a physician, is there a higher bar of expectation for you to have better stuff, bigger stuff? That would be very challenging, I think, whether you're coming out of residency or you're in practice, you know, to wrangle your behavior. It's hard enough to do that as an every person or as any other profession. But I would imagine because the salary potential is so high that is a huge part of the financial planning challenge.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe. I think that applies to everyone. And to be honest with you, it's all anecdotal, but I feel like every time I talk to doctors or I'm in a group of people, the immediate question is more less about what do you earn. It's, oh my gosh, she must be buried in student loan debt, to be honest with you. So I think going back to Tyler's point, I would always just shop the rates to refinance. It may not look super attractive right now. I know for a fact a couple years ago, some of those people were refinancing their loans and it was like 2 to 3% interest rates, which is fantastic. Again, just know the drawbacks. And is it too early to jump into the public student loan forgiveness? Too early?
Okay. No, okay. Go right. That's perfect segue.
If you work for a nonprofit or a public institution, you could be eligible for the loan forgiveness, but if you refinance and go private, that's automatically off the table. And so for that public student loan forgiveness, if you're with a qualifying institution, you can look it up online. You can look it up to see if you're at a qualifying employer. Make 120 qualifying payments or 10 years worth. You're in the clear. You can apply. And in theory, they should forgive it. And they don't, at least from what I've seen, they don't look at your income or anything like that. So you could be a physician making a few hundred thousand a year, meet the requirements, and you're good to go. And even during COVID, when it was on forbearance, those months where you weren't paying were still adding up towards it. So that's where it can cut against you and become counterproductive. You're paying extra when they're just going to forgive it anyway, mm-hmm. potentially. Mm-hmm. But if you're a private sector and you're never going to go public, that's not going to apply to you.
Speaking of salary, I want to talk about contract negotiations for salary, benefits, and non-competes. So let's get into some of the pros and cons. What are some of the key factors that maybe affect compensation first for physicians in different specialties?
There's a lot of packages now being offered where there's your base comp plus incentive compensation, plus they're adding new types of non-qualified deferred comp plans, which sound really attractive and can be in the right situations, but it just depends on your situation. But a lot of scenarios we see that these comp packages are multi-layered. So it's your base comp, what your core work's going to be. You might even get in the position a few years out where you could be potentially the president of your group, and there could be compensation for that piece as well outside of what you do seeing patients and things like that. So there's a lot of structure to that, and I think some of the big hospital systems, it's an annual type thing where it's renegotiated. If you're in the smaller private sector world, a little more difficult perhaps just because it's not the forced kind of timeline like you see at a bigger hospital system. So you'd have to negotiate with individuals versus more of a group approach. But you got to go to bat for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a shortage of certain physicians that are out there, right? Mm-hmm. Anesthesiologists, radiologists, there's issues that are there. So recognizing that, recognizing your value, but also mm-hmm. if it's your first job, you're not going to have a whole lot of room to stand on, right? You got to kind of prove yourself too. So put your best foot forward and look at the other benefits that are there.
Yeah, I would just piggyback on that. This is a topic where to be honest with you, it sounds a little bit confusing unless you get into the weeds, and it would take too long to get all the way into the weeds on this one. But I always think of how you get paid. Like if you have a lot of money left over, a lot of positive excess cash flow, kind of building on top of like that non-qualified deferred comp, essentially trying to find ways you can sock more money away for yourself and save on taxes. I've seen that a lot where, physicians, professionals like that, they get far enough along. To Tyler's point, they take on more responsibility. And then you can negotiate how much of your salary is W-2 versus 1099. If some of it's 1099, you can get a little bit creative with some other things. So again, I won't go further than that, but that's generally how you're compensated and some tax planning ideas. That's where my mind goes.
And well, I've seen scenarios where physicians will create their own LLC and then do what are called locums and go work at other hospital systems on their days off from their their current work. And they can make quite a bit of money doing that. Mm-hmm. 2 or 3 days, make $40,000, $50,000. I mean, wow. It's a real thing. And they have their own business as well mm-hmm. to manage. So there's different ways that salary and your total income can adjust.
That's super creative.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, as we talk about insurance, insurance, this is a big thing with our company. It's important to everybody, but I heard somebody talking the other day about somebody they know who's in medical practice who didn't have the basic fundamental insurance policies in place. They were very focused on malpractice more than just maybe every person's financial needs as far as the insurance. So let's explain what is the importance of health, dental, vision, retirement, and disability to a physician, and kind of talk about the employer contribution limits and retirement plan options. If you have any of those, that come to mind, maybe we can give some tips.
You're saying in general or like a physician or a doctor who's operating their own practice?
I would say in practice.
Their own though, or just in practice?
Well, are there distinct differences between the two scenarios?
No, I guess fair enough. I was just thinking, I wasn't sure you're going. So yeah, I mean, I would say whether you're the owner of the practice or you're just a member of the practice, equally important on both fronts when it comes to health, dental, or vision, right? I mean, that's doesn't matter if you're a doctor or not a doctor. That's all important. Mm-hmm. So not as much there. Going back to some of the tax planning pieces on the health insurance side or some of the other insurances, again, I always go to, like, can you set up things like a health savings account depending on what health insurance is offered? Can you do flexible spending accounts for, like, out-of-pocket dental and vision? It's just more ways where you can sock money into those accounts and you save taxes on what you put in, kind of deal. And that's going to vary by the insurance plan. So as much as you can leverage, you know, having multiple options where you get access to those accounts, I think that's great. So, but again, I'm always thinking taxes when your income's high.
Yeah, for physicians specifically with the disability piece, if you're in a big hospital system, you're probably going to have a group plan that's offered. Not all those group plans are created equal. There's probably some gotchas in there and things to pay attention to. So looking to supplement what you're given through work is a great idea. And that, to Spencer's point, that applies to anybody. But specifically with physicians, because it's very specific, especially if you're in a specialty, you know, your neurologist or an anesthesiologist,
whatever
it might be, your role is different, right, versus somebody who's maybe...
you're about like a hand surgeon.
Right, yeah. It's all about the specialty. So there can be limitations within the policies, or there can be actual beneficial definitions that give you a wide range of what's covered. So paying attention to that's key, because don't just accept what they give you in your benefits package and say that's enough. You need to go further with it and dive into the detail.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on this front. I just always encourage people to look into it. I've even heard the same thing with malpractice. Like, oftentimes they'll have that provided for them, but I'll hear a lot of people in the industry, be it, you know, pharmacy side of things or dental or anything, where they'll practicing at a hospital, they'll say, like, well, they'll have you covered, but if something actually happened, you'll probably want your own policy that you can leverage in addition to theirs to look out for your own interests versus the company. So that's a very cynical way of looking at it. Insurance in general is pretty cynical, but from what I've seen, it's often not that expensive to go get your own personal malpractice policy, so that could be something to look into as well.
We're not insurance agents by any means,
let me just
throw that out. Tony likes it when I throw that out there. That makes him happy, smiling. What about, so just as I understand this, do physicians need umbrella policies in addition to a malpractice?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the umbrella would be on the personal side. Malpractice is business related.
Gotcha.
So two different worlds.
Wow. Okay. Non-compete agreements. This is out of my milieu. So why should physicians consider these before they're signing? I mean, it seems obvious to me, but do people really not read the fine print before they sign these documents?
Hard to say. You think of somebody smart like a physician would do that, but maybe not. I think, and just in general, non-competes are kind of on the way out. You know, there's a lot of legislation being passed, and they're really hard to enforce and things like that. So I'm not sure that's as relevant as it used to be. Maybe with certain small practices it might be, but certainly like the big hospital systems. We saw during COVID, all the nurses going back and forth, becoming traveling nurses. They could go across town and be a travel nurse and make double
Great
the
example.
Pay.
Great example, yeah.
I just don't think that's going to be a big contingent.
Okay. Disability insurance and malpractice coverage needs. So let's talk about disability first. I want to explain to people what it entails in brief. And then is that really something that's critical for a physician? I mean, any more than the average person?
Yeah, I would say yes. Just because generally when you get into the weeds with the disability, it all comes down to, you know, the underlying definitions within the policies, which a layman's way of saying it is just, are they going to actually pay you and for how long if you go out on disability? So you really have to get into that. And I've seen some hospitals where you've got, you know, physicians making, you know, $250,000, $300,000 a year. And if they go down, their disability policy is only going to pay them $5,000 a month, which I say only, but you're going from $300,000 to $60,000 overnight. That's huge. And so you definitely should look at getting something on top of it. And again, I think someone said something about like hand tremors or something like that. But even if it's a disability where you're not bedridden, but you just can't do your daily job, that's probably a more slippery slope for physicians, dentists, people like that, where you have to be really mindful of it. And the only angle I'll take real quick on that, because I know we already touched on disability, for practice owners, there's there's the personal disability side, and then, you know, covering the overhead for your business if you go down, which is, it's kind of disability, but it's more covering your overhead and things like that for the business. Not if you're disabled, you can't work, are you going to get paid? It's both fronts. So you have to look at both sides of that too.
I just looked at a policy 2 days ago, try to figure out where this person landed in the definitions, and there was 5 different classes of employees, so you had to figure that part out first. Then there was all subcategories based upon what state you lived in. Then there was the definition of disability. Then to Spencer's point, I was like, what the hell? Are you going to get paid or not? Like,
wow.
where do we end this? So it's very convoluted. Again, most experiences that I've seen, people don't read that much. They don't even know to request mm-hmm. that document. That's where we come in to help and give some guidance and then ask the right questions. Just mm-hmm. make sure we know what's actually available should something happen.
It's a giant roadmap.
It is.
It's insane.
It's complex.
All right, we're getting to investment strategies for fluctuating income levels.
Sounds great.
And fluctuating income, I would think, would be really relevant on the front side of the career when people were coming into their first business as a physician, opening their first practice. So how does a budding physician manage their cash flow during residency and early career years? This is a big one, and I just had somebody ask this question recently, looking at to solicit the help of a CFP on this level. So what would you say to a potential resident that's going into
resident, career? I don't know if you know which way is up at that point because you're just in the grind, right? It's 80-hour mm-hmm. weeks, 100-hour weeks. It's kind of getting through that piece of it. So it's exciting to see the other side of it and, again, get that first deposit, right, that first check. But if you can pay attention to the cash flow and try to not rush into any big major decisions, and I'm thinking home purchases, vehicles, take a vacation, do that stuff, right? You got to live. But especially if you have plans to grow a family, there's a lot of things that you can regret doing if you do it too soon versus being methodical about the process. So the income's going to, it's not even, if I wouldn't call it a variance, it's just a complete switch, right? You go from nothing to hundreds of thousands of dollars overnight. It's very easy to get caught up in that. So if you, from an investment standpoint, if you can look at your cash flow, build your cash reserve is number one, look at what's available through the retirement plans and make sure all your other insurances are covered, then you can go and have the fun stuff and do the things you want to do. But oftentimes it's reversed. So go ahead.
Oh yeah. So I would think that with the circle, the network that you're building, all high-income earners, and mentors might be high-income earners as well. You're going to get a lot of investment advice from people who have been around the block a few times, and, hey, I've got a great find for you to invest in. How do you approach that with your potentials who are coming in the door?
Yeah, there's a bullseye on their back. People know they have money. They're going to get pitched deals. And as your network expands, your centers of influence change, people are going to approach you for those outside deals. And most of the time, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. You've heard us say that before. But it's going to keep happening. And the ones I kind of chuckle at are the ones where we'll be brought a deal or something to look at, and it's brought to by another physician who put the deal together, who's mm-hmm. not, has zero experience doing it. Mm-hmm. They're just smart and think they can, which is great. But what's the track record? What's the history? Or is it just my buddy who's also in this group is now pitching this deal? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's Facebook groups for these things. There's all sorts of stuff. Wow. So they're bombarded with these, I'll call them advertisements mm-hmm. or solicitations. And so really having somebody like us overlook their shoulder to bring it back down to the ground level, I think is very valuable.
Yeah. I just, in my experience, you're playing catch up, to be honest with you. I mean, that's a rough way of putting it, but you're probably coming out with not a ton of cash on hand, a large pile of debt, and probably next to nothing in retirement savings to look at. So to me, it's a walk before you run kind of deal. You're going to get there, and it is, you're at where you're at. And so you really should be turbocharging things like the 401k, IRAs, other accounts before you start looking at alternatives. Because if you've got a huge pile of debt that's not going away anytime soon, you need to get cash on hand, and you're thinking of things like a house and kids in the future, probably the last thing you should be thinking about is getting into some illiquid alternative investment. Even though you've got the income, things are moving in the right direction. Again, like time and a place.
Mm-hmm. Good tips. Retirement planning is probably the key to the conversation here. Let's kind of run through some of the best retirement accounts for physicians as we see them every day and the power behind some of these.
I'd say 401k or like a 403b is probably going to be the best. Essentially, that's just an employer-sponsored plan where, again, you can put in, if you're under 50, $23,500. That's probably going to be your best friend because your income's probably going to be too high to put money into like a traditional or pre-tax IRA and get the tax write-off, and you probably make too much money to put into a Roth. You can maybe get around that, but point being, you could put in that 401k, 403b, and no matter what your income is, you'll be able to get a tax write-off, or you could put it in Roth, same deal, and you don't have to worry about it. So to me, that's definitely the best one, and then if you have money left over, start looking at IRAs and things like that, and you do need to consult someone on what's the best fit and, can you put directly into the Roth? Can you get around that? Do you have to just do the traditional? That's where it gets a little bit wonky, but for sure 401k, 403b to start and then move from there, in my experience.
Tyler?
That's the power of that tax-deferred growth. Just mm-hmm. the more you can put in tax-deferred today, let it compound over the years, get your tax benefit if you're going to go that route. I think that's going to be great for the long run. Also, a lot of physicians and kind of smaller groups will see scenarios where they will participate in the profit sharing of the company, and that can allow somebody to get $60,000-$70,000 and sometimes higher tax deferred into their 401k plan. It's a combination of their contributions plus the company match plus profit sharing. And so if you can get into a group that has that feature, that could really supercharge the savings.
Awesome. Asset protection. I mean, when I read this, and I'm reading from my notes, you know, as a non-CFP, but asset protection strategies for medical professionals. Let's talk about what it means. Is this kind of estate planning? Is that what this falls under, or is this?
It can tie into it, I think, but I think probably more insurance is what I would think.
Okay. So I want to list some of the potential financial risks for physicians. If you have
lawsuits, first
those.
One, right?
So malpractice,
top of mind,
right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Lawsuits, right, top of the list.
How do you use this is a question I thought was interesting. How can someone in the profession use legal structures like LLCs and trusts to protect their assets?
Yeah, it's like that example I gave earlier where the physician works for a hospital system, but then there's the locums on the side. And so in that scenario, a separate LLC makes sense to protect yourself and go in and contract with somebody else. And at that standpoint, you're creating that layer, right? That level of protection versus you as the individual. And on top of that, you would layer in the insurance needs and so forth from a liability standpoint. Because the lawsuits, I think, are the biggest risk. Just like their physicians have a target on their back for investment deals, same thing for lawsuits.
And lastly, estate planning. Estate planning is important for everybody. What would you say were the high points for a budding physician or a physician that might be a little different for the rest of us?
Yeah, again, I would consult the attorney on it. I always go back to the trust side of things. Like often if you're a married individual, you've got a spouse and maybe you're the one physician in the group and your spouse isn't, then as far as when you start retitling things, restructuring things, I'll see attorneys recommend, you know, maybe the non-physician spouse title certain property in the name of the trust. Varies by attorney, so I've seen it go, you know, all over the place. But things like that is what I think of primarily when it comes to the asset protection side. But again, you're playing it through to the most cynical. It really only comes into effect if people are going after you, but you kind of have to treat life that way once you're in that position.
I think the end cap here is seek the professional, the certified financial planner, your CPA, certified public accountant, attorneys, insurance agents. Make sure you have all your ducks in a row. Don't just pop out of residency into a practice and think that you've got it made just because the salary is high.
And ideally have someone. Yeah, and ideally have someone who's going to help you wrangle in all those different people. It's a lot for you to, you know, just get out of medical school, residency, making a good income, working a lot of hours, and then for you to take on 6 different advisors and have to correspond with all of them is a lot. So ideally, you've got someone who's going to play the part of communicating with all of them and helping those siloed individuals speak to each other.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, guys. This has been really educational. That's it for today. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to share with your friends, and we'll catch you on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.